Well, what do you know? It must be the Zantech radio show because we came up straight to the top of the hour, February the 24th, 2026 at 6 p.m. 1800 hours military time. This is the Zantech radio show on your community radio broadcast system and technology. You're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City, KCPC, Camino. That's what we're doing. Here is Polly Castro in the studio. A little later, Glenn Farr will be calling in. Where is our 1287? There he goes. Hi, Glenn. I'm doing some announcings. Are you there? No, I'll put that up.
And I'm here.
Yes. Hello, Glenn. I'm just going to spin out describing the rest of what we do. I gave the station ID, Glenn Farr and Polly Castro. Glenn's out on the road somewhere. Polly's in the studio. And a little later on, as announced, I'll play you an intro music for this, will be Ken Krugler discussing AI for nonprofits. If you can remember from some time way back, we used to use this little bit of music, so I'll give you a spin of that before we go much further.
Memories.
Oh, memories, yeah. Was a new stunt there. I brought up the two theme tunes from Zantech for these last 20 plus years. One was the Fractal Zoom by Brian Eno, and the other was Pentatonix Daft Punk. Using the computer itself. Yeah, using the computer itself as a mixer. So those two screens up. I faded one down as the other one came in. I'm so proud of myself. Oh. Yes.
Yay. How are you, Mr. Polycastro?
I'm doing very well, Glenn. And here's what we got first. I don't know if you heard it, but I've gone to town with AI again. This is the Zantech show. Is still a technology show. Essentially, it's not the AI show. In the past, it's been the personal digital assistant show, the smartphone show, the what are internet domains show. So we will give some credence to AI. First off, I'd like to do an announcement that tells us who's coming in at, if I may, Glenn, at... Wait a minute, the music's still going. Don't let the music stop. There's a song. I'd sing it, but I'd spare you. Oh, listen to that. He's still going there. Where's he coming from? Oh, there it is. This is the show in which mistakes are actually features of the show. What I'm going to do is play you a spot that's been used to announce Ken Krugler's arrival a little later on, and I've mixed Ken up and done a mashup with some AI. I hope you enjoy it, and then we'll get back to you. Oh, hello. There you are. Not your master, use it. Cut it, paste, abuse it. Hi, folks. This is Polly Castro of the Zantech Radio Show on Tuesday, 24th at 6 p.m. Glenn and I will be in the studio talking about free competition against the Adobe World Affinity, a letter I got from Conduent where my data was stolen, but I have no idea who they are. And who the heck is Sienna Rose? Here's Ken Krugler to tell us more about it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ken Krugler, a local nonprofit founder who teaches people at other nonprofits how to effectively and responsibly use AI. I'll be on the air February 24th at 6:30 p.m. talking about why now, more than ever, the abilities to clearly communicate and effectively manage are superpowers for AI users. Use it, cut it, paste, abuse it, smoke it, poke it, hack it, host
it. Always! That's about as insane as it gets, so Ken will be in here with some better sense than I just made there. What do you think, Glenn?
That was beautiful. I love the way that you're using all sorts of different formats and mixing them together. It's exciting, and it's something that is, with AI becoming much more mainstream in a way that I see as a positive way, and in that everybody can kind of get their fingers in and work with this and in many cases for free. Right now we're talking about, you know, music and videos that we've created. And then Ken will be working with us and talking to us about how to integrate AI into our workplace, you know, specifically nonprofits. But I'm sure the information will also be useful to anybody working with or newly working with AI.
Right, and what we will do actually is Ken will give a little talk here, and he very sensibly sent in a series of what's known as FAQs, frequently asked questions, which is great for an interview because normally you say, well, let's say you're interviewing somebody about hot air ballooning. There's an awful lot of questions about that people would commonly ask. They want to call in and ask, and the frequently asked questions are things like, how much does a balloon weigh? It must be lighter than it. That's not true. A hot air balloon can weigh thousands of pounds. It's just thousands of pounds less than the air that it displaces. Oh, it's not a show about balloons. I'm sorry. But you see where I'm getting, right? So 6:30, Ken will be here, say a little bit. We'll have some frequently asked questions. We'd like our call-ins after that to be relevant to the kind of things that that Ken actually said, and we have arranged that as a call-in. Let's see, there's some other stuff here. Oh, yes, this one here. May I play another little snip to you in the half an hour of homework or so we've got? I'm increasingly putting the snips online with credits. This snip or audio clip of about a couple of minutes is by a gentleman called Chris Bowden out on YouTube. This is about large electric motors and the voltage and ohms and the amps business. He goes on a marvelous rant to explain why big, powerful motors use high voltage rather than high amps. You might think when you have a great big elevator motor or, I don't know, probably bigger than that, something that operates a giant crane, or, oh, I know, something that opens the lock gates on a dam. If it's a very big electric motor, you might think, oh, just give it 110 volts and crank the amps. But the opposite happens, which is crank the volts. So it makes it more dangerous but more economical. If none of that makes sense to you, you might as well enjoy the fact that this guy is on a wonderful rant. So all credits to Chris Bowden. And I did have to, if you listen very carefully, snip out some cursing, which only enhances it, but not for the FCC. So here we go.
Want to see something cool? Much like other deviants you should know, some days we get paid to break expensive things. If your coach didn't teach you, a goth girl will. On occasion, in the right situation, a little torture can be a healthy thing. It's way better to find the weak spots in the shop, because once it's installed, repair costs start jumping by orders of magnitude. The angry dudes in fancy suits develop a bit of a tood when filthy dudes with collars blue need new parts to do the things we're supposed to do. Have a look at this thing. They just rebuilt the motor rotor for Mark's random orbital reciprocating rectum record. What we want is lots of watts, and watts are just volts times amps. Ampere, though, is a bit of a size queen. All they care about is girth. Thankfully, this is a rare place where the guys that stack cash and the guys that stack tolerances actually agree. Because thin wire isn't just cheaper, it lets us have more turns into coils, and more turns make magnetic fields more betterer. So we can stamp down the amps if we jack the voltage up to Jesus. Voltage is a gold digger and only cares about how thick your plastic is. But insulation is way less expensive than wire, and that's why big motors run on high voltage. 480 is foreplay at this scale. This runs in the kilovolts. Voltage is the pressure of potential difference, and it's pushing against the insulation on all those coils. If it gets out, we're gonna have one of those loud, expensive, explodey days. So how do we test to make sure the wires don't bitch out? Check out this mega right here. The name comes from mega ohm meter, and it's a tiny little torture box that generates a high DC voltage, around a kilovolt, and measures the resistance. Hook one wire to a winding and the other to ground, and hope like hell for more resistance than that time you tried to get her to clean her side of the bathroom countertop. The old school ones had a hand crank generator in them. Here's me using one in a power plant. Yeah, it still works, but the new ones are better. A similar thing is called a high potential test. We call that a high pot. It works like impact play for a motor. We spank it with way more enthusiasm than it expected and see how loud it yells. It's kind of like megging it out, but has way more ass behind it. High pot tests the wire and slot liner insulation, phase paper, wedges, and varnish. There's also surge testing, which finds faults in interturn winding and phase-to-phase insulation. This one will do both and goes all the way up to 12 kilovolts, which is important to remember because if you do enough of these tests, it's only a matter of time before that sumbitch bites you. But it's better than slamming a monster to get you right back in focus the moment you start to daydream. And that's pretty cool.
All right. Thanks to Chris Bowden there. If you couldn't get what he was ranting about, and he quite brazenly on his T-shirt while he's doing this has the expression Asperger's is underrated. So what he was actually saying is that when he refurbishes electric motors with coils and windings in them, there is actually a device where you can pretend you're high voltage with a tiny current so that you don't blow it up or electrocute yourself. So you can actually take several 100,000 volts at a tiny current, which is what happens when you have static electricity. He expressed it for this show, Glenn, what he said. Have I lost you, young man? Are you still there?
No, I'm here.
Oh, you fell asleep. That's terrible.
No.
As promised on that slot, I don't often make spots and slots for the radio show, but I thought this was worth it to announce here. And then in the meantime, I mentioned some other things and making sure that there are at least some things that are not AI. There's been a lot of ranting about the fact that anybody out there that's used the Adobe products for years and years and years, I'm looking at you, Illustrator and Photoshop, anyone that's used those products for years and years and years and tries to get the latest editions will find the cost has gone through the roof, which brings to the forefront any kind of competition that's either costs less or is free. Now, anyone that's been a graphic designer for any length of time has got a lot invested in using Adobe to make their products. Most of the cost of the Adobe subscription comes from the fact they've added AI because that's the buzzword, and I gather that most graphic designers could well enough do without it or get the AI elsewhere, but there it is. I won't even go into what the cost is now, but it's extortionate. There are alternatives like GIMP, G-I-M-P.org, GIMP.org, that are free. I might point out they are not Photoshop, but they do Photoshop-like things and can open the PSD files. The one I've just learned about recently is one that was a commercial product from Scotland and has now been bought by Canva, the guys that make flyers and business cards and the like. The product is called Affinity, okay? I'm just taking a look where the website is. Oh, well, there you go, affinity.studio. Do you see? It's got a funny top-level domain, affinity.studio. You can download that free for Mac and PC. They do want you to have a Canva account, whatever you think of that. You can get a free Canva account. You don't have to pay for that, despite anything anyone says. Wait a minute, where are we? I'll tell you what I just did a minute ago. I'm ashamed of myself. There we go. Yeah. So there's a link to Affinity at Affinity. When you sign up with the Canva account for free, that's what they use to let you in. And ironically, they seem to have figured out that the free product runs on your computer, doesn't expire, isn't a subscription. However, if you get this, if you pay for it, guess what you get? You get the AI stuff that most Adobe users don't want. I've tried it very briefly. And I quite like it. And they are apparently going to bring out a version for the iPad and possibly Android. I'm not sure. How about that? There, as promised, okay. I said it. Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now on my Chromebook in Chrome. So it'd be nice to see, you know, when this does come out, like you said, on the iPad.
Right. So of all the four or five major operating systems we've got, the Chrome operating system on your Chromebook, not made for that. There are a relative dearth of apps for that Chromebook, but that's specifically because it's more like internet-based stuff and it doesn't have the horsepower to do a lot of graphics and stuff. The other one that came up right after that, and I was ranting about it in my intro there, was I got a paper mailing, not an email, a paper mailing, I guess to convince me it was real. By the way, folks, I've mentioned avoiding scams and stuff. Give no more credence to stuff that comes through the mail in the mailbox with your name on the cover and something that says Medicare or whatnot. Give it no more credence than anything else. So this came through the mail. I go, all right, they've got me. I'll open it. It's from Conduent. Do you hear that? Conduent. Have you ever heard of Conduent? Conduent?
I have not in this context, no.
Neither had I. So I got a postal mail from them and had to look up who the heck they were. It said, we're terribly sorry. A number of accounts have been broken into. I did a little bit of my poly research, and there's a link out there. Oh, when they say a number, what they're talking about, I'm looking on the website, a link to 25 million government contractor hacks. In other words, Conduent had a very groovy relationship with the federal government to do who knows what. I'm not sure exactly, but in that regard, that must have possibly been why my data was compromised in some way. Such a generous company, Glenn, they offered me not money. Oh, heavens no. A wealthy company like that doesn't get wealthy by giving money away when they mess up. A credit check. Well, I've already got that from two other places that lost my data. The off-putting thing is Conduent, the company, Conduent, is a contractor for the federal government, and I can only wonder when the Department of Government Efficiency, was it DOGE or D-O-G-E, a bunch of miscreant young guys got into our Social Security database and who knows where else. So we'll never get to the bottom of this, but as long as they're not giving money, I don't like them. If they give me lots of money, I'm like, ah, it's a nice company. But that's the breaks. What you can do about it? Almost nothing. They're just saying, oh, we'll just give you free credit checks. Like, this has happened so many times before, I've already got that.
Another thing that I'll point out on this, and I get quite often here now, in the mail, it's got handwritten cursive.
Oh, yes. But they're too nice. The cursive is too nice.
Who's written to me?
Yes. It would be better if it has a bit... I'm sure you can get a font which wanders off the line the way my handwriting does. I discovered the other day I still know how to write with a pen, Glenn.
Oh, wow. I do. I don't know how to print. I don't know how to do cursive anymore. And writing with a pen is becoming increasingly more difficult. I have to think about it.
Right. One of these days I'll figure out how many times I handwrite anything. It's probably a line or two a day, if that. All right. On the next line here, I'm tearing through the homework, so we're here for Ken when he comes in. I've got on that screen there, who the heck is Sienna Rose, okay? Spelled as it sounds, Sienna Rose, all right? And if she had as many streams as it suggested she had and sold as much product as apparently she did, sounding like this, I can only wonder what it is I'm missing. But this is Sienna Rose, and then I'll tell you what I think about that. Hold on just a second. Okay, this could be a Mikhail Graham show, The Other Side, with like music I love to hate or something, I don't know. But that's Miss Sienna Rose, or is it? Why have I put that in the show, and is this the kind of music I like, given that you've heard me doing rappy AI? But, oh, there's the giveaway. Polly does rappy AI stuff, and somebody else invented Sienna Rose and this piece of music called Golden Quiet. Now, I've got a link on my site to a Wikipedia article about who the heck is Sienna Rose. She's not the only one, but she's the most obvious example I could find of an artist that is completely synthetic. A picture of her, movies of her performing on stage with a microphone and lights, cover art for her albums, addressing fans and so on. And somebody very astutely pointed out that when she performs on stage, if you zoom in, the number of teeth in her mouth varies over time. That's a clue right there. I don't think I can stand much more of that. But it's kind of remarkable that's possible at all. And it's a bit like the story about the man in the pub with the dog. And the man in the pub with the dog says to his friend, you know something? My dog can talk. And the fellow goes, really? Does he do poetry? And the dog owner says, listen, just be amazed he talks at all. Never mind what he does. So I thought that was funny. So there you go. Yeah, that's an example which you can come up with, Ken, of what exactly does that mean when you hear some music? I don't particularly care for that sort of music, but I must admit grudgingly, I've heard some AI music that ethically actually says this is generative music or generative art. I'm just blown away by it, and some of it I like. Can I tell the difference? Kind of. That's going to change over time, though. So that track was called Golden Quiet. I bet you love it. Silence is golden, perhaps?
Let me ask you this question, Polly. Didn't we ask AI to have Sienna Rose cover a real song?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, what's happened is whoever did this, and it's probably just an individual, there's enough resources at hand to do this as an individual, they've put in a series of prompts, and you'll get a basic song and a basic rhythm and a basic melody and basic instruments. And then you go tweak, 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 tweak. The latest flavors of AI from Suno and places like that are that you can dump a sample of a song in there and make something in the style of that. There are guards in place, so you cannot readily produce knockoffs of well-known artists. But the fact is, how can you knock off somebody that doesn't exist? I mean, you might... I mean, the queer thing is, if you use Suno.com, which we've talked about a bit, and you pay for the account, the music you created belongs to you and is copyrighted by you. So it may well be that Miss Sienna Rose... exists, though she does not, is copyright, and it may cause trouble to copy and emulate and do whatever again. Now, all music and all art is essentially derivative. In other words, it doesn't sound like nothing at all. It sounds like something that went before because it needs to be, you know, familiar. That's a bottom line. All right, here we go. Let's look at something different. Oh, this is fun. Yep, sorry, I'm getting carried away now. I go, can AI clone my voice, and how well can it do? Well, no, the next best thing. Let's see if I sign in here. I did not come prepared for this, but I can do this. Okay, let's see. Can you give me a second while I find this? A lot of these sites want you to sign in with a Google account or something like that, right? I have no problem with that because what happens is a token gets sent over. That site cannot actually steal your credentials, okay? So right now I'm signing in with Google.com because there's a site here that I wanted you to hear. What it is a narrative site. What it will actually do is generate a narrative from a script or anything else. I'm doing two things at once. Can you hear my voice going flat as I can't concentrate? Like, no, 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 like that, right?
Why don't you concentrate for a moment? Let me just explain to people. You did just mention something that's very important, and I don't use often enough. That is, when you do go to a site that might be unfamiliar to you, using Google, or you can also use your Apple account to sign in, have them sign in for you, is as I understand it, probably a safer way to access those sites, correct?
Yes, if you use Google to sign in, it sends over a token. In other words, if anyone cracks in there to see the saved password, it won't do them any good because that token won't work anywhere else. Let's see, how do I resend that? You know what? Don't ask me again on this device. I'm trying to log in, but it's the station computer, and I would hate to leave stuff like this behind for people. Let's try that again. Let's see. No, I don't mind doing that. Well, Ken's in the studio now, so maybe I ought to cover some other stuff. The website that's linked on there, unfortunately, if you want to look at it for us on our behalf or to check it yourself, it does need a Google login, and I've suggested before that it's a good idea to keep by a discardable account so that you can not be identified. On my discardable account, I create a first name and last name like he's fake or Joe is a nit. Nobody says you have to tell the truth. All right, so I don't have an advantage. I don't have an example of those fake voices, which are actually quite convincing. Let's move on to the final thing before we introduce Ken in the studio here. I read a hilarious article that says there's a someone, the name is on the article I've got in the list, accidentally hacked into a vacuum cleaner website. Like, I don't know if it was Roomba or not. The idea is the Roomba can be controlled remotely. The vacuum cleaners can now be controlled remotely over Wi-Fi with a schedule and looking where to deal with the dust and so on. So thousands of these vacuum cleaners log into a data broker so that you can control them from your iPhone or whatever. This gentleman decided to dump all the code out of the vacuum cleaner, feed it into AI, reverse engineer, and hack it. In so doing, he hacked his way into the server himself and found himself controlling 7,000 robot vacuum cleaners. So there are fences in place about reverse engineering code and script. The crazy thing is, if anyone's ever seen assembly code, if you dump the assembly code, it's almost unusable because you can't tell what it's doing. There's no labels or functions or comments or anything. Reverse engineering now will say, looks like this, could do that, maybe the other. It does. I've tried it out a couple of times. In this case, it inadvertently gave the keys to the kingdom of where the vacuum cleaner was locking in. So that will come up for Mr. Ken Krugel, who's in the studio now. Do you want to grab mic two there, Ken? And what Ken brought up first. First of all, welcome, Ken. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
All right, Ken was in here, not the last show, but the one before that, about a month ago. And there's quite a bit of interest, and it's inevitable people are going to be dealing with AI, whether they feel like it or not, that's true. Now, Ken has some FAQs here, as I recall. Like, what kind of questions does people... Shall I ask you them?
Up to you.
It says, we hear a lot, and this is a good question. I go, hey, I'm not being given a press release to give Ken good press. A good question. We hear a lot about AI these days. What's actually changed recently that makes this moment different?
Okay, so a couple things. There were recent model releases by OpenAI, ChatGPT 5.3 Codex, and Anthropic with their Opus 4.6 that were significant improvements to what these models could do, especially in complex, long-running tasks. And I think one thing that really triggered a lot of interest is a person wrote an article titled "Something Big Is Happening." This guy Matt, who works at a company using AI, mm-hmm. and he wrote it in a really good way. And it starts off with, "Remember February 2020, where you're like, oh yeah, I hear there's a virus, and like it, you know, people on cruise ships are getting sick.
Oh yeah.
And then like 2 months later, everybody's hoarding toilet paper, and like countries are shut down.
Yeah."
And he's like, that's this moment now. And then he goes into an explanation for why he feels that way.
So it's a parallel to the COVID.
To COVID. And he makes the point that programmers, like these models are really focused at automating what programmers do. And in his view, like programming is done in the traditional sense. It's over. Like now if you're a programmer, you are creating a good specification. You're creating a good test suite. Like how do you know when you're done? And then you're having these AI agents write code for you. Like it's a fundamental change, and it's only really possible as of like 2 weeks ago. And he said programmers are the ones that are seeing the ground open up in front of them because they're the target audience, the key audience for a lot of these AI companies. But he's like, if you were paying attention, if you understood to the level that he and other programmers understand, you'd be like, and this is going to happen everywhere.
Now, this is in the last 2 weeks, you say, and this supersedes anything that Claude.ai could do?
Well, it's a new Claude model. It's a new ChatGPT model.
It just got better.
It just got significantly better. And the rate at which it's getting better is increasing. And ChatGPT, OpenAI, when they put out their press release, said this version of ChatGPT, a lot of it was written by ChatGPT, which is always like in any science fiction story, this is where like the singularity happens when AI improves itself. Because then you get this ever-increasing cycle of innovation that
Interestingly,
happens.
That was the first definition of a valid operating system like the Mac OS or DOS or Windows. The first definition of an independent operating system was that it was able to compile itself.
Well, that's definitely the definition of what is a real compiler. When a compiler can compile itself, then it's like, okay, that's a real compiler.
So this thing is actually writing itself. Here's where it gets interesting, and that is...
Yeah, things get faster and faster, but... Like what's really different now is this thing can do complex tasks at an expert level for hours on end. Like a task can take it hours to complete.
What would you call a long-running task? Astrophysics or molecular biology?
Well, in this case, it's like, let's say you've got this huge code base and you're like, I need to refactor it in some manner that's super complicated. And it sits there thinking about it, but also deep research typically in the science fields, like you were saying. But it can also be like, here's our company. We got 50,000 documents. I want to go through all 50,000 documents, figure out which ones are out of date, which ones need to be updated, which ones are inconsistent. Right? It's the kind of thing that you couldn't imagine doing as a person. But the AI will happily work away at it 24/7, uncomplaining, and do a great job of it.
You know, Ken, I remember we put it out on the show about a year ago that somebody leaked a chunk of the code base of one of the Microsoft Windows operating systems, the source code that's highly secret and so on. I can't wait until somebody lets the AI loose on that to see what they can find. The other thing that came up is there's a utility I use all the time for graphics. Graphics freaks out there may know this for video, FFMPEG, FFmpeg. Mm-hmm. It's a utility behind everything that goes on YouTube, Facebook, to compile graphics for you. Written in open source going back over 20 years, Google's Code of Summer of Code project fed it into their AI and removed 1,000 lines that did nothing.
I'm sure there are plenty of optimizations for that. But I mean, one of the things that a writer that I like talks about is he does a entrepreneur class with his MBA students, and in a semester they're supposed to come up with a prototype.
Right.
And so he just did that with them, and in 4 days they had a prototype. And the reason why they could do it in 4 days wasn't because they were super techie or anything. It's because they had domain expertise and they knew how to be managers.
You mean knowledge in their field?
Knowledge in their field of what they're doing a startup around, but also they're good managers. Like what's becoming really important now when you think about these AIs as workers is classic management stuff. Like what's a clear definition of what I'm asking you to do? And what's victory? Like, what's the goal, and how do you know when you're done? That's management 101. And so people who can clearly articulate that specification, that description, and sometimes provide hints as to the process and give a clear definition of being done, those are the people who are going to be very effective using AI.
You mentioned a month ago, and it stuck in my mind, an interesting question. Mm-hmm. Every engineer or software person there was says, job one, define the problem. Yep. Then you pointed out a month ago, you can ask AI to clue you about what kind of questions you should
yes,
be asking.
Yes, I mean, programmers I know who are effectively using AI, and this will be the same thing for, whenever I say programmer, in like 6 months, think my job, whatever your job is taking a rough idea and iterating with AI to come up with a clear definition of what you're trying to create.
It's that QA cycle of an idea and refining it and correcting for errors.
And you iterate on it. And it's incredible. And the change that's required for people to be successful is to stop thinking about AI as like a super powerful search or it's like a librarian, and to think of it as a worker, as somebody who works for you. Like if you could hire somebody for $20 a month and they were incredibly skilled in some things and a tireless worker, how would you have them do good things?
Funny thing you should say that, because $20 a month seems to be the starting rate.
Yes.
If you want the next income up from free. So a lot of AI is freemium, you get some stuff.
Yes.
Then the starting rate is $20. Some corporations and companies, and these are the target commercial enterprises, are willing to pay a great deal of money when they consider the saving it will give them.
Totally. And another point is that the models you get for $20 a month are so much better than what you get for free that anybody who's worried about their future work should be paying the $20 so that you are learning about how to be an effective manager of AI workers.
Suno did an interesting thing, which we talked about, which was I made bits of music, and it used version 4 of Suno to produce a full song, and it gave me like 3 or 4 credits. And then it gave me 30-second clips of the next model going, but it could sound like...
Yes. Oh, sure. There's plenty of upsell. There's plenty of upsell.
All the time.
Yep.
All right, so we've got another question here, which is a good one. If AI can do all this work, what do the humans still bring to the table? What do you and I have to contribute to this new slave that's trying to be our master?
Well, it's not trying to be your master. I mean, AI, it's gotten really fast, and it's effectively really inexpensive for $20 to have an expert-level person in a lot of domains. What you're bringing to the table is domain expertise and sort of the management skills I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
Clearly defining a goal, clearly defining what success looks like. And those are like soft skills, like communication, clear thinking. It's like the revenge of, you know, the English degree. Being able to clearly, liberal arts is back and it's going to be on top. Because being able to clearly articulate what you want it to do, like many programmers are not good at that. And those programmers are not going to be successful in this new AI world.
I was never sure if the best programmers had that part of their brain used up, that they were basically, some of the best programmers I know were essentially incommunicative in the English language.
Right, yeah.
The word delegation comes up. In other words, we're supposed to delegate stuff to AI. There's going to come a day when people going, my AI or my boss used AI to tell me to go and jump out the window. So can you walk us through how that actually works with AI?
Well, I mean, the real thing with delegation, and when they talk about it now, is trying to figure out what makes sense to have AI do. And so you got to go through this thought process, which is like, how long would it take me to do it?
Mm.
How long would it take me for me to tell AI what I want it to do and check its work? And what are the odds of AI being able to do it well? Right? And if you had those three pieces of information, you can make good decisions. Like, if it's going to take me an hour and it might take AI 30 minutes, but like I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to iterate on it, then maybe that's not a good thing for AI. But if it's a 10-hour task, if it's go through 1,000 documents, or the example I gave at a nonprofit, I've got 300 PDFs that describe funding opportunities. I need to go through those and see if they correlate with my organization and would it make sense for me to apply. Okay, that would take me several days. I can point AI at it, and in 30 minutes, I've got a really good result. So that's a win, right? I'm pretty sure AI can do a good job of that, and it's going to do it much faster.
I remember a few years ago when computers started to become prevalent, they were let loose on the King James Bible to figure the styles of the different writers mm-hmm. by the word density and conjugations, mm-hmm. which was pretty interesting because the books were not written in the order we know them, which
no.
is not surprising.
No.
Same way as a code base
yep.
will never appear in the order that it was written.
Right.
What's the biggest mistake you see people making when they try? Because we're all trying. What's the biggest mistake when people try to use AI?
Like they think about it as Google search. Mm. Right, you put in a vague question like, I need to raise money for my nonprofit, right? And you get back a vague response and you're like, oh, AI sucks.
right.
You know, and also, I think the other biggest mistake is that people equate today's AI with what they tried 6 months ago or a year ago, or they equate what AI really means today free versus what it means today paid. If you're using a paid model, and you are able to clearly articulate what you want it to do, not a vague question, but as if you had somebody working for you and you gave them explicit instructions what you wanted them to do, for most people, it's going to blow their mind.
I've found interesting when I'm experimenting with AI, I try sometimes to ask the most generic question, and how can I raise money for a nonprofit? How can I raise money for a not-for-profit?
Mm-hmm.
Very politely, it comes back, we need a little more information.
Right.
What kind? And it goes through an iteration, which I'm impressed with, which search engines really could never do.
No. And that ability for you to ask AI, like, here's what I want to do. What do you need to know from me in order to give me a good answer? That's a fundamental change to how you are working with a, let's call it a tool, right?
Oh, it's off the script a little bit, but what did come up is a lot of these AIs have an option to turn off storage of your query results, but mm-hmm. it's not obvious. What I'm saying is that if you asked a question like, what's the best way to raise funds for a nonprofit that's sending cows into space, for example, mm-hmm. and then you realize now you're ashamed of yourself as a vegetarian, the query result will be stored out there in AI.
Well, there's, okay. I mean, in terms of privacy issues, if you're okay with your emails being Gmail and with Docs and Google Drive,
yep.
then for a lot of that stuff, you should also be okay, unless you're like posing questions that you are ashamed of.
Don't do or say anything you wouldn't say in front of your granny if you were
right,
alive.
Right. But, you know, the whole it's in the cloud. Yes, all this data that's Gmail and Google Drive, et cetera, your Google calendars, that's all in the cloud, right? The difference with AI is whether the key point is whether your data can be used to train the model or not. And that's where there's that risk of like data leakage.
Right.
And that's why I tell everybody turn that off when I teach my classes.
Interestingly, that happened with Facebook when there was the scandal about it being used to subvert the elections was the fact that before AI, even algorithms being used, Cambridge Analytica.
Right. Well, Cambridge Analytica had scraped a lot of data from
right.
a lot of sources.
And they combed through it to find out which sort of people were doing that
right.
could be targeted with ads. So this right. is only making it, shall I use the word worse?
Yeah, it's a AI, like what is it? It's dual use technology, right? Any technology can be used for peace and it can be used for war if it's sufficiently powerful.
Plowshares and swords.
Swords, yes.
That was about delegation, which is pretty yeah. interesting. What's the biggest mistake you see people making?
That was the...
Oh, we got that yeah. one, yeah. this is the important one because it's your specialty, Ken. What do you teach AI workshops for nonprofits? How does this apply to organizations that are not tech companies? KVMR is
right.
not, strictly speaking, a tech company, amazingly
right.
enough.
And most nonprofits are not. But I was hoping I was making the point that the people who are effective with AI aren't techies.
Mm-hmm.
They are people who can clearly articulate their mission, give clear direction to the AI, clear definitions of completeness. Like that's the real gold right now in terms of skill set.
Mm.
And that has nothing to do with tech.
I remember in about 2000, there was a statement that for the first time, people were buying computers for what they can do, but not for what they were. So myself, going way back, mm-hmm. always bought them for the marvel of taking them to bits and getting them to do stuff. At some point about 2000, your auntie or your granny would be getting it to communicate with the grandchildren
right.
and having, needing no knowledge, but requiring it, which is where I came in. I've heard an answer to this, but I'm interested in what your answer is. They say, oh, AI is going to take away our jobs. The answer was, it will only take away the jobs if you're not cognizant of AI.
Well, yes and no. There are some jobs. I mean, yes, AI in general, I think, is, and the positive viewpoint is, since it makes gives people more capabilities. It makes them more productive. Companies will just do more with the people they've got. There are some jobs which AI can replace, like support people. There are a bunch of support jobs, and it's not like those people are going to get repositioned elsewhere in the company. There, you are going to see, I think, massive force reductions, layoffs, in the support roles.
You're saying they ought to be able to be redeployed, but if they've only ever done tech support, they're not going to be very good at doing whatever else it is they could do in the company.
Right. I mean, and if the company, like, they're like, okay, we have a need in, you know, I don't know, the marketing team. You're going to be looking for people with a marketing background, not a support background.
So the answer is adaptability in the end.
Well, so your domain expertise and your ability to clearly communicate with an AI, those are the things that matter. So if you have domain expertise, then I think you're going to be okay, especially at nonprofits. Like when I teach these classes for nonprofits, nonprofits are always like they're under-resourced, right? You're always trying to do way more than what you have. So unless you think you're in a nonprofit where they're like, oh, well, we could get rid of two people out of the three that we have in the office.
And we could do it with less money. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Nonprofits, they're going to expand what they're doing. They're going to do more to fulfill their mission. If I was at a large company and I was in an organizational group where I thought most of the jobs could go away because of AI, then I would be worried. And it's going to be a painful disruption, and it's going to happen way faster than anything we've ever seen.
Oh, that new vocabulary again, disruption, that started appearing at the dot-com boom. It's like, you know, break everything and do stuff fast or whatever. I should remind our dear listeners that we have in the studio with us today on the Zentech Radio Show, Ken Krugler, that is specializing in AI for nonprofits, not-for-profits. Using both those terms is okay?
Totally fine by me.
And the website where you can be found, Ken?
AIforCommunity.org.
Singular, AIforCommunity.org.
Yeah.
Okay, so people can communicate with you there.
They can sign up for, we have I'm teaching an online class this week, and I'm teaching the next one, let me think about it, it's March, I think, 18th and 19th.
Okay, here's a great question, and I would have thought of this if you hadn't, being a smarter person than I am. What does bad communication with AI look like?
So bad communication with AI looks like, can you write a funding proposal for my nonprofit? Right? Can you write a donor outreach piece for my nonprofit?
Uh-huh.
Right? That's a bad communication.
Bad initial communication.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's small talk to AI, though.
Well, if you want to be effective with AI, instead of writing that, you would say, here's the background or document on my nonprofit, which is like the two-page description.
And you can dump it in there, which a lot of people don't realize. You can pick up the text and dump it in there.
Dump it in there, or you create a document. In fact, Claude now has this great thing called Artifacts, where it will work with you specifically with the goal of creating a document. So anytime I've got some document that I need to use, like in the future, I'll go to Claude Artifact and I'll iterate with it on defining what my perfect donor persona looks like, or the quick backgrounder on my company. And then once you've got that, you feed it to the AI and say, okay, I'm going to do a donor outreach piece. What's it for? Like, who are we trying to go after? What is the amount of money we need to raise, et cetera? Like, you give it as much context as possible. Just like if I had an intern working there and I'm like, hey, we want to do a fundraiser. And hopefully the intern would be like, okay, I need more. Like, tell me, what do you want? And so a good conversation with AI gives it as much useful context as possible, and then gives it a very specific goal.
I did find in my case since the last show, a good saying for people using AI would be, don't assume it can't do it. If it can't do it, it'll tell you it can't do it. So if you put in there, how do I make explosives, it probably won't do it, not because it can't, but because it won't, okay? So in my case, I put in the address of my website and said, please describe the search engine optimizing problems with my website. It's very polite about it, lots of problems. Now, what Ken's talking about, if you are a not-for-profit, and you have hopefully somewhere around there documents for fundraising, a website, a mission statement. Everybody needs to have something like that. The mission statement is the most interesting one of all because it actually defines the problem. Mm-hmm. You can feed all those three things in, and I suppose the worst question you can ask the AI is, what the hell am I doing?
Well, it's interesting what I talk about in tomorrow in my class that I'm teaching is context, analysis where you need context.
Right.
And I talk about how AI benefits so much from having good documentation. Like, everybody knows, okay, good documentation is a good thing, but like very few people actually spend the time to do it. But with AI, that becomes incredibly valuable. Those documents that describe you, your mission, your capabilities, your limitations, all those, you know, even the procedures, all that stuff is incredibly important for the AI to be able to give you good information, good feedback.
I've said in the past the documents decrease redundancy, increase clarity, and it goes fine, and then it does. Yeah. Nevertheless, I would never put out the end result because it's sometimes a bit quirky and important things are missing.
Well, I mean, with AI, you always have to, just like if you had an intern, right? Let's imagine you had the, best intern ever, right? Incredibly smart, super motivated, et cetera. But if they did something, you wouldn't just release it as a press release or put it on the air. You'd be like, let me take a look, right? And that's where your domain expertise becomes really important as well, in being able to evaluate what the AI creates.
I discovered, folks might remember, at San Francisco International Airport several years ago now, an airliner landed and crashed on the beginning of the runway.
Oh, is this the Korean one?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And some interns at the Transport Safety Board came in to write it up, and the spoof version got out. And I will not repeat it because it's racist stuff. How that ever got out, I have no idea. I think somebody was just hovering over a button and going, I'll get fired, but I don't care.
Yeah, I think some intern was like, I'm tired of working here, and I hate my boss. And yeah, and then the newscasters just replayed it.
Without thinking,
yeah.
I mean, that business about without thinking is a problem because I think the human element ought to remain there.
Human in the loop has to be there.
I think also in that last show we got a call in from somebody that said they were actually a victim of what happened up here.
DA's office.
Yeah, the DA's office.
Right. Okay, so that's a great example, right? So for people who don't know, DA wrote something to a judge saying this person should be denied bail for these reasons. Mm-hmm. And the reasons given referenced California law, except they were bogus.
Right.
Right. And so that person's suing because they were denied bail. I can guarantee you the prompt that was made to ChatGPT was probably, help me justify why this person shouldn't get bail. Right? That was the prompt. And that is completely the wrong prompt. It's a leading question, right? Mm-hmm. Instead, what you'd want to say is, help me decide whether or not this person should be denied bail.
Open-ended,
right? In that case, it's open-ended. You know, make sure everything you cite is actually taken from California, you know, civil code, whatever, with references, and then you would double-check it. And now you're no longer feeding into the desire for the AI to sort of please you. I mean, it gives the AI a personality maybe more than it has, but the sycophantic behavior where it's like, that's the best idea I've ever heard, Ken. you need to work actively to prevent that from happening.
There's a funny thing, and that is visitors to Japan, where I lived and worked for over a year as a technical rewriter, an English teacher. I was warned when I went there that Japanese will very rarely, out of etiquette, say no.
Correct.
They would rather, I think you've been there.
Yep.
They would rather provide an answer so that you don't feel let down, even if it's not quite right. A Japanese person would know that it's a polite answer that's wrong.
Yes.
A foreigner would think it's either right or wrong. There's not a halfway please you answer.
Well, the equivalent is like, I would like to, like, I don't know, you're talking to a travel agent. I'd like to take a plane from whatever, Tokyo to some town. And they'd be like, I see. Perhaps you'd like to take a train. And you're like, right. No, I'd like to take a plane. And they're like, oh, really? From where? Tokyo to where? This town? Have you considered a train? And anybody who's Japanese would be like, they're screaming at you saying, there is no plane from Tokyo to this town.
I didn't learn many Japanese words, but the ones I did learn were mutsukoshi, which means it's very difficult.
Mutsukoshi, yes.
By the way, this came up recently. Oh, hey, we forgot about our friend Glenn that's out on the road. How are you doing?
Good. I'm just saying, we can't get there from here that way.
Yes, we can't get there from here. Hey, how do you handle Q&A on this show? Like, do people just call in? Like, do you?
Well, we're covering the bases people might ask, and I think you might want some calls in a moment. This is taking a bit longer because they're good questions.
Okay.
How about from now on, we invite our callers to call in?
Okay, I just wasn't aware, like, you know, hearing Dennis on the call made me think, oh, maybe there are people who have questions.
Oh, there's nobody on the call right now, but we'll invite our listeners at 530-265-9555 to give us a call and talk to Ken about AI in general, and specifically, I guess, for not-for-profits and non-profits, not that I can tell the difference. And a question coming up for someone listening right now who hasn't really tried AI yet. What's your advice to get started, if you even want to, I should add?
If you even want to. Well,
you're already doing it, whether you want to or not.
Right. I mean, my go-to is Claude. I think it's, you know, all the companies have issues, but I think Anthropic tries the hardest maybe to be ethical and to think about the bigger picture issues. And Claude, because of that, also is a little less of a yes man. A little less sycophantic, and
it's less commercially driven. Is that considered true?
The deal is
advertising driven.
They make more of their money from people using their backend APIs versus ChatGPT and Gemini with Google. Like, their money sort of comes from engagement, from people using it a lot.
So they'll be pleasers.
They'll be more, I think, just generally motivated to be pleasers versus Claude. So what I would do is I would just go and spend the $20 a month to get a Claude subscription. And then actually, curiosity is the most important thing.
Right.
Like, I wonder what would happen if. Like, that's the best way to start your engagement.
Now, they say that killed the cat. What's bad things can happen with AI?
If you've got mental health issues, I would not engage with AI. I mean, I think if you have mental health issues, you want to engage with a professional.
Right. That's paradoxical, because even before AI, online therapists appear.
Yep.
And the suggestion is that now many of them aren't even human at all, so you're not knowingly doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a concern. I think, you know, in general, it can lead to cognitive decline if you let it do thinking for you. Like, there are specific steps you can take where, for example, I say, you always write the rough draft yourself. You can brainstorm with AI. But ultimately, you write the rough draft, and then you can have AI critique it. You can have it make suggestions to you.
But don't let it go front and center.
Don't just abdicate your ability to think.
Right. Let's see who's calling in now. They've been very patient. We appreciate that. And this is Ken Kruger in the studio with talking about AI. Hello, caller. You're live on KVMR.
What's your first name?
Yeah, what's your first name, please? Hi, Jeff.
Hey, we're experimenting with AI at my work, and one of the biggest issues we had to contend with is the potential for leaking our intellectual property out into the wild.
Oh, okay.
And so we've had to make, you know, it's there's so many AI engines out there, and it's really, every one of them is different, and you have to really be careful if you're working with any kind of intellectual property to make sure that your data, your info, does not get out into that engine and therefore out into the world where people can pick it up.
So here's what I'd say. If you have a policy that says, you know, your intellectual property, you can't ever expose it via Gmail or Google Drive or any cloud service, then yes, you cannot upload it, you know, as part of a conversation with AI. 100%. I'm going to say there are versions of AI now that are like HIPAA compliant. Like, you can get a version of ChatGPT and I think Claude and definitely Gemini that, for things like medical data, comply with the requirements for privacy. Whether you would trust one of those systems with your priceless intellectual property is a separate decision.
Ken mentioned in the last show, Jeff, that if you're going to upload, for example, a user database with different contributions of money or locations or whatever, you can hash it, so-called, to anonymize the people and unhash it when you get it back again. So the AI doesn't actually specifically know who those people are. Is that a valid treatment?
Are you asking me or Jeff?
Yeah, I was asking.
Well, I mean, for intellectual property, like if you're actually talking about, I don't know, design documents, things like that, then the hashing thing doesn't work. It works for spreadsheets.
Right.
For those, if you did want to use AI, the models that you can freely download from like Hugging Face and run locally are getting increasingly powerful. It's not that they wouldn't have value. They're just not nearly as good as the frontier models from Anthropic and OpenAI and Google, but they would have value. So if I was concerned about that, I would just run some of those models locally.
There is the possibility. Jeff, go ahead. Sorry, Jeff.
I was going to say, what you said earlier was one of the people at work were discussing this, is the engineering requirements definition. If you can define your problem well enough, then AI might be able to provide a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of that is that when you do get something back, somebody has to document what you just resulted in.
Right.
And that's my world, check writing.
It right.
Is, sure. Somebody's got to, and you design this thing to do something, a tool, an API or some kind of a software tool. Somebody's got to define what it does and how it does it.
So you can't be a voice in the wilderness. You have to be accountable, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the articles I read was there's going to be, with the advent of AI, you're going to need a lot more technical writers to be able to make that stuff usable for other humans.
I have seen, Jeff, and it might be used in government right now, I won't say where, you can ask most of the AIs, can you write this using a vocabulary of no more than 500 words? The question is, which 500 words?
I mean, there are a lot of tips for prompting to make it sound more human, and a lot of that is like, don't use any of these words. You can also do things like give AI examples of your writing and have it create sort of a very generic description of the style you write in, and then have it apply
there
it
is?
To you can do that.
There
you can,
is a there is a world out there of that's defined as simplified technical English.
Yes.
That there is a dictionary and description of how you should write in for technical simplified technical English. Mm. We're using that for aircraft maintenance.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because while English is the standard for maintaining aircraft, you have to. A lot of your audience is not English is not a first language.
Right. You know, I'm thinking such a manual might say, "Don't get in front of the whirly thing."
I ran across the word damage. You have to use the word "you do not cause damage" as opposed to "do not damage something." You have to say "do not cause damage" in a simplified technical English description of something, of an action.
Okay.
There is actually a simple English version of Wikipedia, which I've discovered sometimes, and it's quite adequate at describing what it's about. There's a term used by SpaceX when a craft blows up, and it's an unscheduled unit disassembly, I think it is, or something.
Disassembly, yeah.
Yeah, there's also a euphemist's dictionary, and a euphemism means a sort of elaboration of a simple word, like trash can becomes a garbage disposal operative device.
Oh yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how AI is being applied in a highly technical engineering focused company where I work.
Yep.
It's going to be really interesting as to what happens there.
Yeah, may you live in interesting times, right? The Chinese curse.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. All right, well, thanks, Jeff.
That's much appreciated, okay. Jeff. Any more callers? Call us in for Ken Krugler with AI in for Nonprofits at 265-9555. Thanks, Jeff. All right,
Actually, it is time to remind folks it is 6:57 this evening, and we're about ready to wrap up.
My goodness, we're running out of time here. I am going to play some silly voices, because I did get them on here.
The only way to deal with the unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion.
Okay, an elegant yet relaxed British accent. She's going to take over from me, okay?
Well, let's see. I think I'm best for ads, explainer videos, podcasts, social media, and also nuanced conversations.
These voices are accompanied by what I can't say on the air, which is an SEG, if you know what that is. It's a something-eating grin.
Mm.
All right, is one here.
She had this way of standing in a doorway like she was deciding whether the room deserved her.
So we monkey around with this, and I've asked AI to tell me some good jokes, and it's very good to make your own birthday greetings to people and throw in a bit of originality. Tell me a joke involving a caterpillar, a goat, an elephant, and a banana peel. And it's kind of shocking what it can come up with.
Okay.
We're going to wind up the show here by my telling you, and Ken telling you himself, that we've been talking the last half hour, 40 minutes, about AI for not-for-profits, and the website for Ken Krugler here is
AIforCommunity.org.
AIforCommunity.org. So we'd appreciate your questions at zen@kvmr.org. We will get them to Ken, and we're going to hop out of here at a turbo speed to let in Democracy Now on the airwaves. You're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City. Thanks for calling in, Glenn, even if you didn't get much of a look in with the fun and games we had going on here. We can play some more voices.
I just want to take a moment and say thank you all so much for being a part of KVMR. Once again, KVMR FM, Nevada City, KCTC Camino.
All right, now I'm looking to see if I'm up to date with things. Yes, Democracy Now, 7 through 8 p.m., then, 8 p.m., beg your pardon, From the Sublime to Ridiculous with Don Haslett. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Don. And let's see, Rock Outside the Box with Rue Cantata. This has been the Zen Tech Radio Show on Community Radio, KVMR FM, Nevada City. As I said, thank you so much for being in the studio, Glenn. I'll give you a recording and I'll put it up on the site. How's that?
Perfect. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks,
all right. Here we go. I like this. I'm doing the SpaceX launches. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Goodbye.